Hello, and welcome to Tales from a Bibliophile, a podcast about all things reading and the communities that books create. I'm your host, Carly Galorn Stewart. Usually, we'd have a different guest on the show each week to chat about all things books, but this week it's just me, and we're going to chat about our summer reading guide. So I put out a little mini summer reading guide that you can find on our Substack. So it is talesfromabibliophile.substack.com. And that's where you can find the summer reading guide, and you can find a little mini weekly reading update and a monthly newsletter. But you can find the summer reading guide there too, and that's what we're talking about today. It's very easy to find. It's called Summer Reading Guide 2023. So I have six books that I think that you'll love that I have already read, and then I have six books that I'm planning to read this summer, and I thought I'd tell you a little bit about them. You can find a link to all of them in our bookshop.org shop. That link is on our Instagram, but it is, let me find the exact link for you. It is bookshop.org/shop/tales from a bibliophile. And that's a great place to look if you are trying to find the books that we mention on the podcast each week. Each episode has its own little list, and you can find every book that we talked about in that episode on that list. I am still updating some of the earlier ones, so they don't have quite all of them on there yet, but the more recent ones do. But this week has its own bookshop.org page, and so you can find a link to all the books we're going to talk about today on there as well. As usual, I would love to start off with a little reading update. I am currently reading Six of Crows by Leah Bardugo. I had never read it. If you've been listening for a minute, you know I read The First Shadow and Bone and enjoyed it enough. It didn't leave me wanting more per se. And so I tried to jump into the second one. My coworker and I really want to be able to talk about them on the podcast one day. And she loves the show. And so I was going to jump in and watch the show, but I wanted to try to read the books first. I could not quite get into the second one. I don't know if it's because I was doing it on an audio. I may try again in the paper format, but I was really just trying to read them so that I could get to the TV show and so that I could get to Six of Crows, which is set in the same universe, but about 200 years after the events of Shadow and Bone. Spoiler alert, I did not finish the Shadow and Bone trilogy, and I skipped straight to Six of Crows. I am very happy with this decision. I don't think I'm really missing something. There are some words, there are some terms that I might not have understood as well if I had not read at least the first of the Shadow and Bone series. There's some explanation of the Grishaverse and each different one, and that's that sort of thing. It is a fantasy world that Bardugo created, so there are some terms that are new to the reader. And so I do think that reading the first one of those helped me have a little bit of an understanding of the world, but I don't think that's necessary. I think it explains it enough as it goes through with context clues. I think you'll be able to pick up on what's happening in the world. But Six of Crows is so good so far. I am like loving it so much. Its little tagline is six dangerous outcasts, one impossible heist. And so it's definitely a heist novel, which I love. But so it's a convict with a thirst for revenge, a sharpshooter who can't walk away from a wager, a runaway with a privileged past, a spy known as the Wraith, a heartrender using her magic to survive the slums, and a thief with a gift for unlikely escapes. Kaz's crew is the only thing that might stand between the world and destruction if they don't kill each other first. Y'all, this is so up my alley. I love a good heist novel. I love a good gang of misfits. The Breakfast Club has been my favorite movie since I was 10 and very much too young to watch it, but definitely did. So this is great. I am loving it so far. I am just having a blast reading through it, underlining stuff, annotating. That's one of the reasons I love reading physical books. I love that with audiobooks, I can keep reading while I have to do other things, but I truly, truly love a physical book that I can annotate, that I can mark up, I can write little notes in. I can go back later when I reread it and see the sort of words and sentences and moments that caught my eye the first time. I just think that's super fun. Anyway, so I am about 40% through that, a little bit away from halfway, and I am just, again, loving it so much. So I'm excited to keep dipping into that. But so that's a little update on what I'm reading. So let's jump into summer reading. Y'all, summer reading is one of my favorite times of the year. I have loved it since I was a little kid. I was always that super eager kid who finished my summer reading through the library like halfway through, possibly earlier. If you're not familiar with library summer reading programs, I've been doing them since I was a kid. Most libraries have done some form of them forever. Currently, my library is doing where they put a sticker for every book they read, if it's a picture book, or every chapter that they read, if it is a chapter book. And then they get prizes for every 10 stickers. And the last prize at the end is you get to pick a book to keep for yourself. You also get some sort of treat coupon. We're doing a free brownie or cookie from Chick-fil-A. We're doing a free kids meal from Barberitos. We have a few different community donations. But when I was a little kid, we got little like toy prizes. We got coupons from Dairy Queen for a free ice cream cone. And then we always got at the end to pick our own book to keep. And it was my favorite time. There's just something magical to me about summer reading. I feel like kind of the way that some people feel about Christmas or like the end of the year holiday season is how I feel about summer reading. It's just always been such a special, magical time for me. When I was a kid and even a teenager and young adult in school, summer was always the time that I had more time to read. So I never, especially as a kid, like I didn't have as many commitments. I wasn't in classes. So I had more time to read, and that was my favorite thing to do. My mom would like kick me out and make me go be outside and so I could get fresh air, and I would just always take a book. So it's been my favorite time. It's still my favorite time. It's my favorite time for different reasons these days. I am a children's librarian, and I very much love the magic of getting to see little kids get excited about reading in the summer, get excited about prizes, getting excited about the events that they get to come to. I love school visits where I get to tell people about summer reading, and I love getting to plan events that kids get excited about and come into, that get them excited to come to the library. So now that I'm busier, I do have to be much more intentional about making time to read and picking books that I want to read, so that I'm trying to be more intentional about that in general, but especially in the summer when we're so busy, I try to look to some of my trusted sources, mainly the booksellers at Avid or my local Barnes & Nobles that know me really well and know my reading style. I can always count on Rachel at Avid to point me in the direction of something quirky that I probably wouldn't have heard of or found on my own. There are a couple booksellers at the Barnes & Nobles that know, one of them very much knows that I will not read a book if it is in a series that has not been published, like completed yet. So she never recommends me anything that hasn't been completely finished yet. And actually, one of the books on that we'll be talking about today on the episode came out a couple years ago, and I was so excited and I bought it as soon as it came out, but I've not read it because the series was not finished. And it is now, and so I'm super excited to read it for the summer. But I know that I get overwhelmed with the amount of books and choices that I have, and I have such little time to read. And so I wanted to sort of put the summer guide together for you guys in case you are similar. So like I said earlier, I've got 6 books that I've loved reading the past couple years and 6 that I'm hoping to read this summer. I am very much a mood reader, so I won't be surprised at the end of summer if I have not read them, but I know a couple I'll definitely get through. Either way, they're the ones I'm excited to try to start. This is my first summer not having grad school classes, so I have so much more time to read, and I'm very, very excited about that. Okay, and also please forgive my stuffy nose if you are hearing that. Allergies are killing me. But so the first book I want to share with you, these are the books that I loved that I think you'll love. So I've already read these. I thoroughly enjoyed them. I tried to find like a mix of genres and writing styles so that maybe everyone could find at least one book that they think interests them. So the first one is Godshot by Chelsea Beaker. I read Godshot last spring, and I think about it once a week. At least. It's Beaker's first published novel. It is, her writing style is very unique. It's unlike anything else that I've really read, but I really enjoyed it. It's a Godshot, tells the story of a town that turns to a local cult leader after it's been destroyed by a drought. The narrator is a 14-year-old girl, and it kind of follows her path as she grows up in this town and around this cult and the way that it has affected everyone in their town. But she's also navigating tragedies that are specific to her life, things that have happened to her, the hand she's been dealt. There's a lot of theme, or the themes are kind of loneliness, patriarchal societies, mother-daughter relationships, and of course the cult sort of backdrop. The cult aspect is what drew me in. I love anything. I love a good cult book, fiction or nonfiction. And so I think if you are similar, even though this is fiction, it was fascinating to me. So if you are looking for something a little heavier, or not really heavier, but more thought-provoking, if you like literary fiction, I think this is a great option. I think that I did not put it on my official summer reading guide, but one of the books I hope to read this summer is Chelsea Beaker's last book that came out, which is a book of short stories called Heartbroke. Her style is very similar. The writing style is very similar. Heartbroke is a, like I said, a book of short stories, and it, they all take place, they're all separate stories, but they all take place in California's Central Valley, and so there is sort of a tie-in to the theme. The sort of the publisher blurb for it is that Heartbroke brims over with each character's attempt to salvage or sabotage grace where they can find it. Told in bright, snapping prose that reveals a world of loss and love underneath, Chelsea Beaker's brilliantly illuminates a golden yet gothic world of longing and abandonment under an unrelenting California sun. So I'm very excited to get into that. It came out last year, and of course I bought it as soon as it came out, but I haven't gotten to it yet in true bookworm style. Okay, so our second book is called The Very Secret Society of Irregular Witches. It is a very, very long title that I often get confused and often just call it The Irregular Witches, which is a little bit easier. And it is by Sangu Mandana. I'm not sure if I said that correctly, but the title again is The Very Secret Society of Irregular Witches. And also just a reminder, you can find all these titles on our bookshop.org page. You don't have to try to write them down as we talk. So Irregular Witches is a great little cozy fantasy novel that has romance and found family, which are like, just put it in my veins. I love found family. I love cozy fantasy. It's just, this book was such a warm cup of tea. But it follows Mika Moon, who is a witch that has always been taught to stay away from other witches. When she was growing up, she was never trained by other witches. She was raised, she was orphaned very young, and the person who took care of her was a witch and did sort of train her in it, but she was not exposed to other witches. She didn't have a witch community, which is kind of uncommon in stories like this. A coven is very common to witch stories, so that was an interesting aspect of this one. She has the one sort of caveat that she allows herself is that she has a TikTok account where she pretends to be a witch. But through this TikTok account, she is invited to a mysterious remote house to teach three young orphaned witches how to control their magic. And despite it being against every rule she was taught growing up, she accepts the invitation. The characters in this book are so great. There's a groundskeeper, caregiver sort of person. There's a grumpy librarian, and the three girls are so sweet. So throughout the story, she learns to be comfortable in her own magic and her own skin and sort of break out of the fear that she's been raised in comes to being around other witches. So that was the Very Secret Society of Irregular Witches. It was a great cozy fantasy novel. If you're interested in cozy fantasy, hopefully sometime soon we'll have a whole episode about it, recommending our favorite ones and some of the ones that we're excited to read. My coworker Ash, I think, is going to come on and do that one with me. Okay, so the next one is What My Bones Know by Stephanie Fu. This is a memoir, the author's memoir of healing from complex trauma. It is an incredible look into what it's like to live with CPTSD or complex post-traumatic stress disorder. CPTSD is an aspect of trauma that is discussed very little in official therapist world. It's not listed in the DSM, which is the Diagnostic Criteria book. Cannot remember what that stands for, but it's the sort of Bible for official diagnoses of psychological disorders. And so because it's so similar to regular PTSD, it's not listed in the DSM. It's very hard to get an official diagnosis. But I was actually sort of loosely diagnosed with complex post-traumatic stress disorder by my therapist. And the way she explained it to me was that it is, instead of one big traumatic event, such as being in war or a traumatic car accident or being in an active shooter situation, you know, like the really, really big things we think about, CPTSD is more like little traumas over a long period of time. So you are experiencing smaller traumatic events, but because you are experiencing so many of them over a period of your life, you're still experiencing very similar PTSD symptoms. They're a little different. Which is kind of why it's been hard to get it in the DSM and to get official diagnosis. It's similar, different because of the way you come to have it, basically. So What My Bones Know is Stephanie Fu's memoir of exploring her complex PTSD symptoms and experience and getting that diagnosis. There are so few resources for CPTSD. And so this book is a incredible new resource that is out there. Fu shares her journey trying to navigate her trauma and to find the resources that she needed for treatment. It is very refreshing and reassuring to find a book on this subject. I did this one on audio. I really enjoyed it that way. I think I went and bought the physical book. I'm going to go back and read it again and take notes. This is very much, if this is something you or someone you love deals with, it's a great resource to go back and reference, even though it's a memoir. So that's What My Bones Know by Stephanie Fu. And then our next one is Honey Girl by Morgan Rogers. I read this one probably in 2022, came out in 2021, but it is it's shelved sometimes as a romance novel, but it's really just a sort of coming of age novel that features some romance, but it is a story about Gracie is her name, Grace Porter, and she's just graduated with her PTSD. See, I'm stuck on the last one. She's just graduated with her PhD and she is lost on where to go next. She celebrates her graduation and her completion of her PhD with a night in Las Vegas. And when she wakes up in the morning, she is married to a woman whose name she does not even know. In the very millennial tradition of avoiding our problems, Grace decides to put off trying to figure out what she's supposed to do with her new life now that she has graduated, and instead goes to spend the summer in New York City with her new wife. It has romance, it has great friendship relationships, and it has some family trauma that Grace has to navigate. But above all, it's a story about what happens to you when you work really hard for something, but you don't know what to do once you have it, and you don't know how to stop overworking or reaching for the next thing. Millennial burnout and loneliness are really big themes of this one, and it sort of hit me at exactly the right time. I found it in the middle of grad school, and I was still unsure about if it was even a smart decision for me to go to grad school. I wasn't sure. I knew, like, my graduate degree is in library sciences, so it's very specific, and I knew I wanted to stay in the library field, but libraries are sort of ambiguous about graduate degrees. Like, I didn't need one for the job that I had or the job that I wanted, but I would benefit from having it because at some point at a later date, I might apply for a job that required it. I might move geographic areas, and libraries are all different, and so some of them do require it. It's just the one in my geographical region that doesn't. But either way, this book was really fun. Grace's new wife has a podcast or a radio show, I can't remember, about like sort of spooky cryptoid tales, and it was really fun. It was a really fun aspect of the story. Cannot recommend this one enough. In fact, I may go back and reread it. It's been a couple years. I think I originally got this on a recommendation from Julian Winters, who is a fantastic YA author, and I will now read any book he suggests if they are all going to be sort of up to this standard. So that's Honey Girl by Morgan Rogers. And then we have two more, and then we'll hop into the ones that hoping to read this summer. So I've got one more memoir for you. It is called Nobody Will Tell You This But Me, A True As Told to Me Story by Bess Kalb. This memoir recounts Bess's relationship with her grandmother, whose name is Bobby. Bess pulls in history and family lore from four generations of the women in her family. The focus in this book is on the bond that she shared with her grandmother. And it's rich. She wrote this after her grandmother's death. The book is full of so much wisdom, but it's also really funny. There's a lot of great humor. It was a really beautiful story to read, especially if you're navigating any sort of grief. I read this one, or actually I listened to it on audio, not too long after my grandparents passed away, and they were sort of the first big loss that I experienced. And so this audiobook sort of helped me glue some pieces back together. It is a fantastic audiobook. I'm sure that the regular book is great too, but the book is sort of structured around all of these voicemails that her grandmother left for her. She saved every single voicemail her grandmother ever left for her, which is incredible, and I am so jealous. I wish that I would have done the same. I do not have any sort of voice recording of my grandparents' voices, but I do have some recordings of a friend of mine who passed away. I have some recordings of him playing music and singing, and it is having that sort of like piece of him is incredible. And I highly encourage, if you have people in your life that are getting older or are sick, that you have some sort of voice recording or save their voicemails if you can. But so this book is structured around Bess's grandmother, or the voicemails that her grandmother leaves for her. And so in the audiobook, you actually experience the magic of her grandmother's wisdom through the voicemails. You get to hear the actual voicemails. You get to hear her grandmother's voice. It was very sweet. I really, really loved it. And then one of my favorite pieces of advice, of her grandmother's advice, it has stuck with me ever since. I remind myself of it often. It is, if the earth is cracking behind you, you put one foot in front of the other. And it's so simple, but it was so powerful the first time I read it. It is often really hard for me to keep going in times of hardship or overwhelm. I get overwhelmed very easy. I deal with chronic health issues, both physical and mental. And so I often feel like the earth is cracking behind me. And so this sort of reminder is something that I need to hear often. And that is Nobody Will Tell You This But Me by Bess Kalb. K-A-L-B. All right. Last one that I think you'll love this summer, or that I hope you'll love. I just devoured this book. It's called Such Sharp Teeth by Rachel Harrison. Rachel Harrison is the author of Cackle, and she has a new book coming out later this year or early next year. I read Cackle and also really loved that, so I did not hesitate one bit to pick up Such Sharp Teeth. This book is shelved as horror, but it's not. It reminds me a lot of gothic horror, but it does have paranormal elements. It is on the cover stated as a werewolf novel, and so there is that aspect of the paranormal, but it's a humorous story with commentary on trauma and feminism. It would pair great with What My Bones Know. I read them not too far apart and really enjoyed that sort of connection. The main character definitely has PTSD or CPTSD. Her name is Rory, and she goes back home, which is a place that she had vowed to never return to. But her twin sister is pregnant and does not have any other support, and so Rory moves back home. She goes to the local neighborhood bar one night, and as she is driving home, she hits a giant animal with her car. And when she gets out to check and make sure that whatever she hit is okay, she is attacked by this giant animal. And when she wakes up in the morning, in the several days after, she becomes a werewolf, basically. But this is a very subtle horror novel. It's very hard to describe. The writing is very similar to Chelsea Beaker in a way that it is entirely a unique voice that I have never experienced before, except for in the author's previous novel. It's really great and really subtle. Kind of why it reminds me of gothic horror. It's also really funny. The main character is very funny and very fierce, and I really loved her. And there's a love story that is woven through it that I really enjoyed, but is not kind of the main point of the novel, so to speak. But that's Such Sharp Teeth by Rachel Harrison. And she also has a novel called Cackle. Also has a novel called The Return that I have not yet read, but hope to. Cackle is also very subtle. It is about a witch and a main character who sort of meets this witch and becomes friends with her. I've not yet read The Return. Wow, that was a tongue twister. But from what I gather, it's a little bit more horror. It's not quite as subtle as Such Sharp Teeth. Maybe I'll read it one day. It's, I think, on my Kindle waiting for me. But those are the six books that I've already read in the last couple years that I think will really enjoy, that I highly recommend. They are all different genres, so I hope that you find at least one that interests you and keeps you company this summer. There are six books that I've picked out that I'm hoping to read this summer. They are top of my TBR, and we will see if that happens. The first one is the series I was talking about earlier. It's called series is called The Dreamer Trilogy. The first in the series is called Call Down the Hawk. It's by Maggie Stiefvater. This is a sort of sequel series to The Raven Cycle. The first book in that is called The Raven Boys by Maggie Stiefvater. Call Down the Hawk and the rest of the Dreamer trilogy follows a character that is introduced in The Raven Cycle, but you do not have to have read The Raven Cycle to enjoy this series. She wrote it specifically in a way that you are not going to lack information if you do not read The Raven Cycle. I, however, highly, highly recommend The Raven Cycle. It's one of my favorite series of all time. It's great. It's very subtle, magical realism. It's But so this series, the Dreamer Trilogy, the first book is called Caught on the Hawk, and it takes place after the last of the Raven Cycle books. It follows Ronan Lynch, who has the ability to pull things from his dreams. This trilogy came out while I was in grad school, and so I didn't have time to read it, and I, again, hate reading books and series that are not finished. So even though I was chomping at the bit for this one, I waited till it was complete and all three were published, and that time is now. And I am so thrilled that I finally get to jump into them. I love this world that she has created. She is by far one of my favorite writers, and I love the way that she pulls magic into the real world. And I really love the way she pulls from Celtic and Irish history and folklore for Ronan and his family. Ronan's family is Irish, and I am a massive history nerd, and Celtic Irish history is one of my favorite areas to learn about and read about and explore. So I really, really love this aspect. Ronan is actually my favorite character from the Raven Cycle. And so I was just like over the moon when I found out that she was writing this series that focused on him. I also really love the way the Seafwater writes friendships. And so I'm really excited to meet the new characters that she pulls in this series and see how those friendships unfold and how the relationships that Ronan already has shifts and the way the new ones that he has develop. There are moments of romance, there are romantic relationships written into the series, but she's an incredible creator of friendships, and so I'm very excited to sort of dig into that. The next book is called Dyscalculia, a love story of epic miscalculation. It is a memoir. I found it on the shelf at my local favorite indie, Avid Bookshop, in Athens, Georgia. I was just browsing, and I've gotten back into writing, and one of my goals is to write more memoir-style essays. That's one of the things I've always sort of written. And so I was browsing their memoir shelf in hope of finding some inspiration. A lot of my writing centers around my chronic illness and my mental health, so I was like super intrigued when I found Dyscalculia and read through the summary. Her memoir, her last name is Felix. Dyscalculia is about the author's journey of healing after a massive breakup and an unexpected hospital stay. Felix uses her dyscalculia, which is a disorder that makes it difficult to learn math. It's very similar to dyslexia, but math instead of reading. She uses the dyscalculia as a metaphor for her miscalculations in love. And this sort of metaphor idea hooked me immediately. It looks like it'll be a very quick read. Probably I'll sit down and read it in an hour or two, but I'm really excited about that one. The next one is called No Two Persons by Erica Bauermeister. This is a newer one. It's recently come out, and it came on my radar from Rachel at Avid. She sent me a list of books she was really excited about that were coming up this spring and summer. Two Persons was on it. It's told from the perspective of several different characters who end up in the novel of an author who is our main character. This seems confusing, and when I originally read this plot, I immediately put it back on the shelf because I typically do not like multiple perspective books, especially if it's more than two characters. There are a few exceptions to this. Six of Crows is one of them right now. Six of Crows, I did not realize until I started reading it. It's told from like six different perspectives. But Bardugo does such a great job with it. And I love every single one of those characters. So I actually am really enjoying seeing their perspectives. I am hoping that is the case with No Two Persons. When Rachel put it on her list of summer releases that she was excited about, I put it back on my TBR because I have loved every single book that Rachel has ever recommended to me. So I went back and read the summary, and I realized that this book is a conversation about how books affect their readers, which is fascinating because that is kind of the point of this podcast. I wanted to explore not only books and book recommendations, but I wanted to explore the way that books create community and affect their readers. And so I'm actually pretty excited about this one. It is sort of the plot is one book, nine readers, 10 changed lives. It is a kind of a complicated summary, so I'm not going to read the whole thing to you, but I think it's definitely worth exploring, and I'm really excited to read it this summer. And the next one is, the next one on my list of ones I hope to read this summer is called Brutes. If you listen to earlier episodes of this podcast, Rachel from Avid recommended this book in her episode. Again, half my recommendations and books that I love come from Avid Bookshop in Athens, Georgia. You can shop online at avidbookshop.com. They are not a sponsor, but they could be. They probably don't need to pay me though, because I talk about them all the time anyways. But Rachel came on and talked about some books she was excited about this spring, and this is one of them. It's called Brutes, and it is by Diz Tate. And again, these are all linked on our bookshop.org storefront if you want to go back and find all the ones we talked about without rewinding the podcast. But Brutes is a literary thriller, and it is a coming-of-age story that follows a gang of 13-year-old girls that are obsessed with the local preacher's daughter. When she goes missing, the girls get closer and closer to the investigation and discover something terrible about their town. This book seems like it would be a great read-alike for Godshot by Chelsea Beaker that I talked about earlier. I have been looking for a read-alike to that book since the moment I closed it after finishing it. That writing was super unique, and I am excited to read this one. It seems similar, but this is a thriller instead of just sort of literary fiction. It's a literary thriller, but it's that same coming-of-age story. It doesn't specifically talk about cults, but it gives that same vibe. The cult in Godshot is a local preacher. He like parades as a preacher. So this kind of feels like a similar setup. So I'm very excited to dig into that. Wayward by Emily Hart is my next one. Amelia Hart. Wayward is a cozy fantasy, and we know I love those. It weaves together the story of three women over several centuries with a focus on their resilience and their understanding of the natural world. The story is kind of historical fiction. It's also magical realism, which I love. I've always sort of connected with this idea of magic that comes from understanding the power of nature. And so I can't wait to dig into this. It is, let's see, it is a set in, it's the three different characters are in 2019, 1916, I'm sorry, 1619, and 1942. So in 1619, the character Alpha is awaiting trial for the murder of a local farmer as a witch. She, when she was little, her mother taught her magic, but not the kind rooted in spell casting, but rather a deep knowledge of the natural world. But unusual women have always been deemed dangerous, and as the evidence for witchcraft is set out against Alpha, she knows it will take all of her powers to maintain her freedom. I just really love that line, but unusual women have always been deemed dangerous. That is so true. I think it is still true to this day. But so the second character, the 1942 Violet, is set in, it's set in during World War II. Violet is sort of set in this family who does not appreciate or allow her to sort of thrive. And so her mother died when she was little, and the only traces of her mother that she has is a locket that is bearing the initial W and the word Wayward, which is scratched into the baseboard of her bedroom. And then the 2019 character, Kate, she flees London to ramshackled Wayward Cottage, which she inherited from a great aunt that she barely knows or barely knew. The cottage is worlds away from the abusive partner that she is fleeing, but she begins to suspect that her great aunt had a secret that was hidden ever since the witch hunts of the 17th century. This book weaves together those three stories across five centuries. It is, like I said, a novel of female resilience and the transformative power of the natural world. For someone who has said multiple times that I do not like books with multiple perspectives, this is another book that has multiple perspectives. It also has multiple timelines, which is not always my favorite. I have ADHD, and it is often hard to keep track, and I sort of can't get lost in a story the way I love to if I am busy trying to keep track of the characters or the storyline. But this premise just fascinates me. I love stories of female resilience and the way that women take care of themselves and their community. And I love anything that is sort of magical realism, magic adjacent, especially kind of, as we've talked about, magic that's rooted in the knowledge of the natural world. So also, this cover art for this book is gorgeous. Like, please Google it. Pull it up on Goodreads. It's so pretty. So that's Wayward, Weyward, Wayward by Amelia Hart. Okay, and so we have one more book. The last book that I'm excited to read this summer is called The Future is Disabled. It is Prophecies, Love Notes, and Mourning Songs. It is written by Leah Lashkemi Piatsna Samarshanina. I definitely mispronounced that. But The Future is Disabled, if you look that up, you can find it very quickly. And it is on our bookshop.org page. But this book has been on my list for a while. I saw it on Brisa's Instagram, Breezy Reading. If you haven't listened to our episode on disability and chronic illness on episode 11, that was our guest, and it was just an incredible conversation. But Brisa shared this on her Instagram account a while ago, and it's been on my list since then. I have dealt with symptoms of a chronic illness for over half my life. I did not start identifying as disabled until recently because I do not look disabled. I have what is called an invisible illness. We talk about that a lot on episode 11 with Brisa. We both have the same chronic illness, but I am not visibly disabled. And so I did not identify as that for a long time. But the disability community on Bookstagram has been a really big part of my journey in learning more about disability justice. They're responsible for a good half of my TBR these days, especially after that episode with Brisa. But I had The Future is Disabled checked out from my library for a while, but I realized when I got my hands on it finally that it's one I'm going to want to make a lot of notes in and I'm going to want to reference back. And so when I was browsing Knavid one day, I found a copy on their shelf and picked it up. And so I'm excited to dig into that one this summer. So that's it. That's the summer reading guide. This was super fun to put together. I hope that you find a book on here that you are excited about. If you do read anything from this list, please let me know. I would love to hear your thoughts. I am always looking for conversation with listeners about the stuff we chat about on the podcast, especially the books. So just a reminder, you can find us on Instagram at Tales from a Bibliophile. And our Instagram bio has a link that shares all of our other important links. It has our bookshop.org link. It has where you can find us on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. And it has a link to our Buy Me a Coffee shop, which is a way that you can financially support the podcast if you'd like to. And there are a few other great things on there. The Substack newsletter link is there as well. Thank you so much for listening today. I hope that you enjoyed this episode. We'll see you next week.